collections.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that is part of the reason.
Senator Trump.
Do you have a breakdown as to where that employment increase came? What part of the economy showed?
Okay. Right. When I go through this,
you can put later. Okay. Put it out to this week.
So during the three quarters in 1980, the overall employment was less than during the 1979. It is about 50,000 less workers during 1980 compared to 1979. And among its components, the larger fall was in manufacturing employment, where the decrease was to 205,400 employees from 229,800 employees, which is about 10.6% decrease over the period from the first quarter of 1980 to the third quarter of 1980. The quarter that showed the most substantial fall in manufacturing employment was the second quarter of 1980, when the employment was fall at an average annual rate of 32.4%. And non-manufacturing employment during the same period declined to 811,600 employees from 840,700 employees, which is about a 3.5% increase. So manufacturing sector has been much worse than non-manufacturing sectors during 1970 recession. And I like to explain the format of the table.
Understand that again. The non-agricultural employment gain was higher than, or the figures were higher than the agricultural gain? Is that true? That the employment picture in non-agricultural areas was better than in agricultural areas?
We do not forecast agricultural employment, so I cannot compare directly, but I assume same impact has occurred on the agricultural sector too.
Okay.
And table one is the Oregon Economic Forecast Summary. That shows 1980, third quarter and fourth quarter, they are actual. And the 1981, first, second, third, fourth quarter, up to 1985. The first item is personal income, inflation adjusted. And second one is personal income in nominal terms, which is inflation is not adjusted. In 1981, personal income in current dollars, the model projects $27.5 billion. And if we adjust inflation rate, it will be $13.7 billion in 1981. And each item shows state absolute value and percent change, and the U.S. absolute value and percent change. So we can compare the state's economic movement against U.S. average economic movement over the personal income, average state in the U.S. And the third item is non-agricultural wage and salary employment. Again, Oregon and the U.S. The unit for Oregon is thousands, and the unit for the U.S. is millions. And the model projects 1,040,200 in 1981 compared with 1,038,000 in 1980. So only slight gain, which is 0.2% gain over 1980. And the fourth item is consumer price index. Oregon's consumer price index is Portland SMSA's consumer price index. And compared with US and percent changes, the model projects 13.8% increase during 1981, and national inflation rate will be 11.5%.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Day.
Well, that's already out of high sync, if that's what you're looking at, because for calendar year 1980, actual cost of living increase in consumer price index was, I think, something around 9.3, wasn't it?
National or Portland?
Portland.
9.3?
I think that was just the last month on, yeah. On an annual. It was
higher. Well, all right, you're right. On the annual, on a, February to.
Right.
It was an annual. No, it was an annual index. Sure was. Yeah, wait a minute.
No, last month's increase annualized rate was 9.1%.
Right. You bet.
Based on what now?
Based on the.
On January.
January through December.
No, just January.
Just 1 month's experience.
Well, yeah.
Okay, if you go back, let's try it again. You go back and measure cost of living index from January of 1980, and you reflect it through 12 months, what was the rate in Portland?
About 14%.
14%.
Mm-hmm. If we compare January 1981 against January 1980, then it is between 13% to 14%.
All right. Now, what was it on an annual adjusted basis for January this year? Growth.
Annualized rate?
Yes.
That's 9.1%.
Okay. What was the January figure from a year ago? Do you remember? Was that?
That's between 13% to 14%.
And what did it turn out to be?
That's what it turned out to be.
That's the actual.
Okay. Senator Trell.
Why, got some good reason why the Oregon figures are higher than the national?
Well, it has been higher
traditionally.
Right, traditionally.
Major reason because of the particularly high cost of real estate in the Portland area.
Right.
And it's dropped out, and so you're seeing a decrease.
Mm-hmm. Right. And fifth item is personal consumption expenditure deflators. That's another measure of inflation rate, which is in most case lower than CPI growth rate. The main difference between these two index is treating how to treat the housing cost. And the last item is average hourly earnings in manufacturing in Oregon and US. In the model forecast in 1981, the average hourly earnings in manufacturing in Oregon will be $9.40. From $8.60 in 1980. So about 8.9% increase over 1 year. So table one is the summary table, and table two is detailed table.
Is the which table?
Table two.
Okay.
That's the detailed annual forecast. So I mean detailed. I said detail because in table one, the aggregate personal income figure is in table one, but in table two, all the components of personal income. For instance, it gives total personal income and then the components of personal income. Wage and salary disbursement, which is the over 60% of total personal income, and then other labor income, which is mostly compensation, and farm proprietor's income, and non-farm proprietor's income, and property income, which is dividends, interest, and rent and transfer income. And the last item is contribution for social insurance. That's social security tax. And the resident adjustment is the adjustment for the persons who live in the Vancouver area but works in the state. And the next page shows employment by industry, all the detail. Total non-agricultural wage and salary employment and manufacturing, durable and detail in durables and non-durables and details in non-durables from 1974 through 1985. Absolute level and percent changes, and whenever there is a U.S. figure, comparable U.S. figure, I listed state and U.S. figure both. And table three which is page 11.
Senator McFarland.
I said, what happened to table two? Did I was up here on durables and non-durables and all at once on table 11.
Those are just continuing factors in employment.
Employment and wages and other sectors, right. And table three shows quarterly basis. Same detail information by quarter. From first quarter 1978 through fourth quarter 1985. And employment figure forecast begins first quarter 1981. In other words, the first quarter 1978 through fourth quarter 1980, they are all actuals. And the forecast begins the first quarter 1981 through fourth quarter 1985. Again, same detailed information quarterly. So it has employment, wages, and
we're at page 14 now.
Right, page 14 has employment. Personal income, page 11 through page 13, and the employment by industry, page 14 through page 28. And the wage information from page 29, quarterly again, through page 31, and then housing starts information on page 32, and other economic indicators such as GNP, industrial production index, money supply, federal budget surplus, interest rates, prime rate, new home mortgage rate, and the consumer price index, Portland SMSA and US, and personal consumption expenditure deflator, again Portland SMSAs and the US. So page 34. So it has detailed information annually and quarterly, up to 20 quarters, as we promised when we started.
Okay. What other factors primarily generated the, or were changed, that generated the $43 million in additional revenue for this current biennium?
Mostly employment.
Okay, because you now have all four quarters of employment, and you're able to plug those in, and it should solidify that estimate. Okay.
Well,
These are coming from totally different, as we've discussed with you before, they're coming from totally different approaches. So, you know, and we have not tried to shape either one of the forecasting methods. So that kind of question will never be totally answered, Houston.
I understand that, but and because this is new, you can't really tell what's changed so much.
Yeah.
Other than you had firm figures there. Are there other indicators or assumptions where things were firmed up at this point concerning the current biennium?
Personal income increases faster than the originally forecasted at the early 1980.
And again, because of hard data?
Because of hard data, mm-hmm. And because of the revised GNP figures.
Okay. Where did you get the revised data on personal income growth?
We have generated based on revised GNP figure.
Okay.
That's announced during December 1980.
Okay, so it's really based on an assumption as opposed to any dollar figures that might have been generated based on data that was gathered in actual terms.
Right.
Okay.
Because withholding, for instance, June 1981's withholding reflects May's and April's, which is forecasted by the economic model. We don't have actual figures, but we have forecast for wage and salary disbursement in the second quarter and third quarter.
Senator Trill?
Mr. Chairman, I think this is a tremendous report. I think this is certainly more information we've ever had before on how forecasting takes place, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it certainly is different. Senator McFarland?
I'm back to my question. When you started out this discussion, you said that based on this, presumably as of today, not tomorrow or yesterday, that if we simply handle this with what we have now, that we would have the $88 million gain over the previous budget or projection, but that if we pass the governor's revenue raising measures, we would not have the $88 million, but I think the figure was 75 or something.
Yeah, 73.
And how does that happen? Can I? I'm,
sure.
Yeah. I want to ask this question.
Well, the simple answer to it is that the forecast and conversion to yield formula treats the conversion to yield differently than what our traditional method does. It comes out with $15 million difference over that 2-year period.
Okay, Bob, then using terms like conversion to yield, you lose us in that. Are you talking about the fact that if taxes are higher, then you do maybe less business? Okay.
First of all, we have not tried to force the economic assumptions to be the same,
okay.
So we can't answer it perfectly. But it certainly is in a, we'll get into that. Perhaps we can come back to that, because the detail on the revenue forecast that has been just produced, I think will show you that the difference is.
Okay, are you going to go through that then? Okay.
If that's your wish, that's the next step, is fine. Here's all this.
Okay.
Now then,
okay.
The intellectual problem is to convert accurately
this
from this into an actual tax yield, and
okay.
We have gotten.
Let's go on with that then. And is that okay, Senator McFarland?
Yeah.
We can come
Let's
back.
Let's go ahead. And
okay.
If they haven't answered it, I'll ask them.
They
again.
Will.
The Oregon Revenue Forecast Model represents an incorporation of a sophisticated method of economic analysis into the revenue side of the budget process. In other words, we are using the economic forecast from the our economic model to forecast our revenues. The use of model rests upon the assumption that a better forecast of revenues can be obtained by analysis of economic conditions than by extrapolation of revenue receipts or other tax statistics. So when we ask how much revenue will be generated in 1981 and 1982. We do analyze the income receipt and the statistics, but we did not directly get our answer from the analyzing the tax data. We ask how the economy will behave in 81 and 82, and then translate that economy's movement into revenue forecasting.
Okay. Senator Trump.
Are you saying then that when we count the receipts in April, it will not affect your forecast all that much?
It will affect, but we do not really rely on heavily on the actual collection data.
I see.
If we 3 months from now come to you in what is now a forecast for the first quarter of this calendar year in terms of employment and levels is right, it's been proven, we now know what it is, but the tax yield is off, then we will know that there's something the matter with this first attempt of converting a certain number of workers and a certain number amount of total personal income into a tax form, tax liability.
It'll be in a sense a test of what you're assuming.
I'd like to say something, and I've said it before. It's one of the first things I learned about these things. If you use these things properly, they raise more questions than they give answers. But it does narrow down then, where are the areas? Right now, today, we can't tell you whether the 88 or the 43 is because of a imprecise estimate of employment, tax yields, or whatever. Over time with this, you are able to pin it down not only into employment, perhaps, but specific areas of the economy. Okay.
John, did you want to get your microphone? Did you? Go ahead and get it. We're fairly informal. Okay, let's go on.
As soon as Department of Revenue publishes the March data of actual collection, we will compare that against the forecast by the revenue forecast model. And then we will trace where we missed withholding or advance payment or final payment or refund.
You're getting ahead of yourself. Take it through the documents, because that's the kind of detail you're going to be able to see here in this. You'll be able to check yourself. We know it's going to go wrong somewhere. All right, exactly where and by how much.
And I want to illustrate some of the features of the revenue forecast model.
And again, this revenue forecasting so far is just the first attempt on personal and corporate. We will have models on all the other significant sources of general fund revenue. Insurance, liquor
cigarettes.
Profits, cigarettes, interest, etc.
On those, you have to get a sin factor and apply that to the total population, and you'll come up with booze, cigarettes, and prostitution. From that, you can derive a sub factor that applies to the rest of the economy on how much energy is left to pull lumber off green chains and that sort of thing.
I'm a little uncomfortable putting prostitution to that.
Well, we don't tax it, but it says something about activity.
Well, we can euphemistically call it the fudge factor.
I'd like it.
Okay, next slide, go ahead.
Oregon revenue forecasting model is a multiple equation model which includes specification of a function to describe the distribution of income. In other words, our revenue forecasting model first forecast total AGI based on taxable component of personal income from this, because we forecast not just personal income, we forecast the components of personal income. And we know the withholding collections are related to wage and salary disbursement, and other forms of collections are related to other forms of personal incomes. So since we forecast all the components of personal income, we relate directly that to our revenue forecast model. And Department of Revenue publishes annually adjusted gross income data by income class, 35 different income classes. We reclassify that into 10 different income classes because 35 is too much detail, and if we have 35 income class in our model, that means we have to have 70, because in each income class we have by filing status, joint filers and non-joint filers, and in each joint filers, in each income class, we have standard deduction and itemized deduction. So we'll have too many categories. So we reclassified into 10 income classes. And the model includes all statute tax rates and all statute tax bracket ceilings. That means whenever legislature decides to change the tax law, we can incorporate that and then see the impact by income class, by filing status, and by standard deduction and itemized deduction. So the model allows for simulation of the effects of changes in exemptions and changes in tax rates and changes in deduction allowed by law. And one other feature of the model is, since our model forecasts total collections as well as its components, it captures the collection composition effects. The tax on wages and salaries is collected largely through withholdings, whereas the tax on other forms of income is collected in the form of payment of estimated payments and final payments. If you look at this revenue summary and comparison table,
table one in the unbound documents, about the
fourth page.
The table one shows Oregon income tax forecast summary from 1977 through 1985. And the forecast begins first quarter 1981, so 1981 figure, which is $1,069,000,000, has part actual and half of them forecast, both in personal income and corporate income tax. And from 1981-82 through 1984-85, they are all forecast. So always our summaries table will show past actuals and forecast for biennium. Yes.
Senator Trump.
Mr. Chairman, I noticed that you're showing for 81-82 minus 1.2%. And then we see the rest of the forecast for 82-83 on a substantial increase, 12, 13, and so forth.
What?
But really see, am I getting at something that doesn't make sense?
No, it's the one-time pickup in 80-81. Percentages are all screwed up. You'll notice we went from 7.6 increase for 79-80 to 23%
sure.
increase. Actually, the 80-81 without the one-time pickup is 7.1%. So eventually we have to reflect the one time. Remember when we were here mm-hmm. with you before, and where do you want it to show? It's going to screw up your percentage increases.
And the other factor is indexation. The impact of indexation is in 1981-82. So indexation and one time pickup of about $83 million.
Okay, these are based on current law.
Right.
Okay, so the governor's proposal to stop the indexing would change these factors.
That is in table two.
Okay. Yeah, I'll show two runs there. Okay. But this is an example of a kind of revenue forecast comparison and actual that you can expect out of this project, you know, every quarter. There's going to be a...
Hopefully someday it won't be complicated by special session cuts and bases that I still am just, I get lost every time I look at the budget in comparing things. Okay, table two.
And table two, that's revenue comparison between forecast by the model and estimates in governor's recommended budget. The first one shows under the current law, and second one under the governor's proposal. Under the current law, model forecast for the fiscal year 1980-81, personal income tax, $1,069,000,000, and in the budget, $1,019,000,000, so $50 million difference in personal income tax, and corporate income tax, $38 million from corporate income tax, the total $88 million.
Okay, is everybody understand? That's this year that we're in right now.
That's that $88 million. Okay.
Or just 1 hour and draw a bunch of people in that we can't have time to question. So we'll try to schedule that another time. Tomorrow we do have, and we probably will have, a large crowd of people here on some tax exemption bills. And I ask you to be patient with them and to hear them out.
What day is that?
That's tomorrow. Okay. And we understand this financial situation so much better than they will, that to try to embarrass them, I think would serve no purpose. I think we have to let them know that we are in difficult times, but to understanding that we understand this a lot more than they do. It's awfully easy to jump all over people like that who are very innocent citizens who are representing a good number of people. And then, so we'll meet tomorrow. We will not meet Wednesday, and then we'll meet on Thursday. Okay. Thank you very much.